Welcome to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production. Hi, I'm Carol Bissett, a crime writer, and I invite you with my co-presenters, Liz Hedgecock and Mike Jackson, each week to our conversations on all things murderous. Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Only Murders in My Mind. Welcome as usual, we're so glad you're listening in. And I've got Liz Hedgecock.
Hello.
And Mike Jackson.
Good afternoon.
Here with our thoughts, our discussions. Sometimes we do go a little bit, you know, off-piste.
Don't know what you mean.
No. And my producer did point out that last week's episode, it's information we have used before. And this will happen. We will be bringing things in on a regular basis that we've perhaps mentioned before. So I do apologise if we find that we're repeating ourselves, but it's stuff usually at the front of our minds and we'll say it. So we'll get that out of the way. And we're going to talk about what most of the detectives that we love to read and look at and see on television and films are amateur sleuths, aren't they?
They tend to be.
We do have detective series now where there are a team of detectives. But I think if we go back to the ones we love and know, most of them have not got a qualification or a PI license. They do their own thing. Mm. Would you agree with that? Because if they've got a PI license, if they've got a private detective's license, they're not amateur, are they, anymore?
Mm. Not really. And usually if they do have, then they've got some sort of police
training,
police detective background.
Yeah, and they've got a rule book they're supposed to stick to as well.
And they are encouraged to go on courses and pass certifications and all that sort of thing. And people that are in protection, that do a lot of protection for, like, you know, dignitaries and things like that privately, I mean, that's another level altogether, isn't it? I'm getting back into MI5 again. I'm sorry.
I think my impression of amateur sleuths, if I think of amateur sleuths, I tend almost to veer towards cosy mysteries, which I know is Liz's expertise. But that's where you'd expect almost to find them in a cosy mystery genre.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The kind of classic setup for a cosy mystery is, you know, usually a female detective. Quite often older and retired, or, you know, anyway, has time on their hands. So it could be, you know, kids are up and grown or newly divorced and moved to find a new life or whatever. You know, quite often they have a small, you know, attractive seeming business that they can be busy with, like a cupcake shop or a tea shop or a whatever, or an art gallery or something like that. So something they can, you know, leave in charge of someone at regular intervals, could dash off and do a bit of sleuthing. Yeah, and usually, yeah, they're just inquisitive.
It's interesting you said about the tea shops because, strangely enough, my team now in the NHS is very small. And, you know,
is that because you've been killing them?
Not saying anything.
NHS.
They're small and perfectly formed, but two of the ladies, both in past lives, have had tea shops.
Oh,
one in France, right, which I was absolutely fascinated about, and the other one in the Northwest, which she opened just before COVID.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
So, yeah. So it's not that unusual to have a tea shop, you know, and be a female.
I suppose, but it is, you know, it is quite a thing. I mean, if you look on Amazon, then there are three categories for cozy mysteries. So you can have, like, animal cozies, you can have culinary cozies, or you can have crafts and hobby cozies.
Right.
So this is how very, you know, niche it can get.
Sliced right down into individual types of, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, cozies with cats, cozies with talking cats, cozies where cats are the detectives. You name it. There's probably a cozy series about it. But yeah, I mean, amateur sleuths just spans a whole load of...
It does. It goes much wider than I'd ever realised, actually. Because I think of the usual things, you know, Poirot, Sherlock, Agatha Raisin, the Thursday murder mystery with Richard Osmond.
Oh, Murder Club, yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose the thing with Poirot is he's a retired police officer. So
yes.
He's sort of police adjacent. Yeah. And Sherlock... I mean, he's not an amateur because he does get paid.
Yeah.
Although, you know, they don't mention money because we're gentlemen.
Yes, but he's a consultant, isn't he?
Yeah, but he clearly does okay.
Yeah, he does. He does.
Miss Marple is an obvious one.
Yes.
She's an amateur sleuth.
Yes.
Really in that sort of cosy mystery. She lives in a little quaint village.
Yeah, she's got knitting.
Got knitting.
I don't think I'd ever want to go on holiday with her because somebody will get murdered wherever she is. Yeah. Oh. And the knitting I got knitting needles for my birthday. Thank you, Daniel. And they are deadly. They're great big long metal things. You can imagine. I'll have to use one in one of my books. Oh. You just stick it into between somebody's ribs. You know.
Oh. Or stick it in their ear.
Oh, no.
Seem to be moving away from amateur sleuths.
Sorry. I was just going to say, I went to the cinema and they were re-showing The Mummy from 1999 and the whole mummification process.
Taking the brains out.
Yeah. Oh, it was fantastic on the big screen, though.
With a crocheting hook.
this is what always amazes me when the three of us get together, is how we can move from Miss Marple knitting to gouging people's innards.
See, this is why hobby cosies are so important, because there's all sorts of implements that you can kill people with.
Okay. I was having a look, though, at some other sort of famous amateur sleuths.
Oh, yes.
Jessica Fletcher.
I loved her.
A retired school teacher, which I didn't know.
There you go. Just like yourself.
Judge of character.
Just like yourself. And then she goes off writing murders.
That's right.
And getting sort of drawn into people trying to expect her to solve them.
And one of my favourite is Brother Cadfael, Ellis Peters.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. You often get ministers of the cloth.
There's Canon Clement now, isn't there? Richard Coles's detective.
Father Brown. Yeah. So
again, the human nature thing.
I just kill off priests in mine. I don't have them as detectives.
You do, yeah. Well, maybe it's because, you know, I'm wondering actually if Wen's behind it all. Because all these priests who could be, you know, clearing up all the crimes and doing her job, she's got to safeguard her position.
That could be true. I'm not saying.
Shock reveal in the last book of the series.
When you think all those people we mentioned, you know, Father Brown, Miss Marple, Cadfael, they're all people watchers, aren't they?
Yes.
You know,
aren't you, Mike? I mean, you're a writer. Aren't you a people watcher?
You're a coffee shop listener, aren't
I'm a coffee shop listener. I do. I do enjoy listening and watching people.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I always have a story. If I see something going on, I love being in London for that reason, because obviously all life is there. Mm. You know, it's like Star Wars. A cantina, and we were in a restaurant with the family, and these two gentlemen came in, who were obviously a couple, and they met this lady who only one of them knew. Mm. And I'm going to my daughter, she's the surrogate, that's why they're meeting, and she's going, oh, Mum, for goodness sake, just shut up. But you see, there's always a backstory with me, and sometimes if somebody looks dodgy, it's like, they're plotting something.
They're probably wondering what to have for dinner, Carol.
That's all it is, yeah.
Probably.
But as I say, I was in one of the first books I wrote for the Warrington Detective. I got the idea from being in a coffee shop in W.H. Smith's in Oxford Street. And there was some high-level, intense conversation going on between two people, which I couldn't quite hear. And
you always feel like it's going up to them, so could you speak up a bit?
Yes, I can't quite hear you. So that's where I got the idea for that. So, you know, you do pick up ideas. Liz, you're a people watcher.
I can be, yes.
Yeah. But not you wouldn't dedicate an hour to just sitting at a cafe
if I'm somewhere and I hear something, yeah, I probably will tune into it. So when we were at the art preview, I overheard a fantastic conversation that two women were having about one of the paintings.
Oh, really?
Yes, and you know where they would think about putting it and all of that sort of thing.
Putting it in a good way.
In a good way. No, they were discussing where it might possibly go.
Oh, right.
So yes, it was fabulous.
Yeah. So, yes. Being on the wrong side of some conversations as well. You know, I was on the top of a bus once. A long time ago, in my hometown of Warrington, and two young ladies were discussing a forthcoming marriage of one of them. And she said, you sure you're not making a mistake? And she went, no, anyway, I can always get divorced. And that's how she was going into her married life, you know. And I was sat there cringing.
Wow.
But there are some people, I mean, I always think of the late Victoria Wood. When you see some of the comedy stuff that she wrote, like Dinner Ladies and what have you, you can just picture her being somewhere, seeing something happen that's made her smile. And then she thought to herself, how can I take this and just stretch it to make it even more ludicrous and more funny? You know, I could imagine that she was a great watcher of people and a listener.
An observational, comic. Yeah. And there's a Peter Kay is as well. He just talks about life.
Yes.
I wonder if, as writers, we get drawn towards amateur detectives because they're people watchers like we are. And we feel a kinship with them.
Yes, I think so. Because we want to... we want to get inside their minds, don't we? We want to know what they're seeing and if it's interesting, etc.
And also, you maybe feel like, oh, I could do that. You know, I could be there. I'd have seen that.
Or I wouldn't have done it like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, you get to put yourself into the story, perhaps. Yeah. I think we all like to think that we're, you know, smart like that and we could solve things.
Yes. Somebody said to me, are you one of the characters out of your book?
And I said, hopefully one of those that stays alive.
Well, yeah. Wen and Cassie are the main characters, and I don't think I'm like either of them. So no. I'm probably more like Colin, and he's a bloke.
I can see a bit of Wen in you.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. Because in some of my other books, I am a character in the book, and I know I am, you know. So now you write some amateur sleuths, don't you? You've got a couple of series. How many would you say are amateur sleuths? I know
let
two.
Me think. Pippa Parker, she's an amateur sleuth. Castor and Fleet, they're amateur sleuths. Fee and Jade, Booker and Fitch, they're amateur sleuths. That's probably about it, unless you go to Jack in Sherlock and Jack, and she's definitely got a bit of, you know, mystery solving in her DNA.
What about the Magic Bookshop? Isn't there a
bit definitely. I mean, Gemma is...
investigating, isn't
she? She is investigating, and Raphael's a funny character in that he's sort of amateur and kind of professional, but not a sleuth at the same time, so...
I mean, Raphael comes out with... closey words for a start, you know, and he comes out with some amazing things, doesn't he? That, you know, to him are just like every day, you know, and everybody else would go, what? Say that again, please.
So do you think it is almost a prerequisite of cosy mystery writers that there's got to be an amateur sleuth in there?
Pretty much, because I suppose the thing is you don't want to get necessarily tangled up with police procedure.
No.
And I think part of the charm of it is they can do things their own way, and maybe they get a helping hand from the police, or maybe they don't. Maybe they're actively told, do not get involved. And of course they do, because they're nosy people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I suppose it makes sense, doesn't it? Because Midsummer would be a very boring place if it wasn't for the murders.
It might be a nice place to live, though. Would you want to go live
there?
Would
you want to read about it?
That's another question altogether.
Yeah. I mean, if you think you're Pippa at the playgroup, for example, you know, there'd be no story there if it was just about Pippa in a playgroup.
There wouldn't be much of a story.
It's only
because
somebody gets killed halfway through.
That's the thing that kind of pulls her into the group. Yeah. And the thing is, she gets involved because she's one of the people who was there. So she is a suspect like everybody else. So, so in a sense, she has to get pulled into it. And that is part of the challenge. You know, amateur sleuths, you know, there's generally police about. So it's like, why don't they just leave it to the police? And there's got to be a reason why they get into it. I mean, Jade and Fee, they're both on the boat when the first murder victim
drops dead,
keels over. So it's like, well, obviously, you know, there's some implication there. You know, not saying necessarily did, but you were there. So, you know, you're automatically a person of interest, let's say. So they've got to get into it to clear their names.
I was going to say, in the Agatha Raisin books, she does end up being a qualified detective in the first lot. She's been told constantly by the police not to interfere. And the reason that they let her get away with things is because she can go and do things they can't.
Yes.
She will break into a house and look for clues. And I think that's quite a common thread with amateur sleuths.
Because they're freer. They have different powers because the police can go in and they can search places and they can do this and they do that by the law. But there's lots that they can't do.
But at the same time, some of the things that the amateur sleuths do, like maybe breaking into a house because the police can't, probably is something that the normal person wouldn't do anyway.
No.
You know, so that there has to be that little bit of... they've got to be different. You know?
Yeah, well, it's because also that thing of they're not going in with a uniform on.
Yes.
You know, they're not overtly, you know, screaming, I want to know all about you and how you got involved in this.
Taser. No, they're not doing that, are they?
No, not in my books, they're not, no.
Rushing in going, oh, please. Mm. Quite frightening.
Because when I was looking at amateur sleuths, one of the things that does come up is the fact that it's the settings.
Yes.
Quite often it's a small town or a village.
Yeah.
Historical settings, which takes us back to Cadfael.
Yeah.
Literary and artistic circles. Mm. Many amateur sleuths are depicted as being part of literary or artistic circles.
There you go. It's that hobbies again, crafts and hobbies. You see, this is very, very, very cosy. Yeah.
Care home, which is obviously Richard Osmond.
Yes.
I mean, he struck gold there, didn't he? Because I'm not saying nobody had done that before, as in a care home, but it's the way he's constructed it.
It's not so much a care home, is it? It's more a kind of a retirement community.
It is. And
again, it's that little closed environment, and it's very nice there.
They've all got flats or little, very small, like bungalows.
Nice little flats, and they've got meeting rooms they can go to, and you know, you can have wine when you're at the at the murder club meetings.
Is that
and
a prerequisite then, do you think? Because, you know, going
well, wine
to...
oh absolutely yes. No.
But you need that close community, like as you were saying, Pippa Park and that small village, Richard Osmond and his care home. Would an amateur sleuth,
I think it helps,
would they survive if it was a big city like London?
Good question, because with Caster and Fleet, it is set,
it is
in, London,
set in London.
But the thing is, they have quite a limited social circle because Catherine is a, you know, she's middle class, but they're in kind of quite straitened circumstances. So it's not like she gets to see many people, and lots of the girls that she would have gone to school with now probably wouldn't associate with her because she can't go to those places anymore because they just don't have the money and she's got to work for a living.
Yeah.
You know, Connie is restricted in a different way. In that, you know, she's probably of a similar social class, but her parents have money. You know, she's been presented to the Queen. She was a debutante. Her sister's just, you know, on the verge of coming out as a debutante too. So, you know, there'll be a very small social circle that she'll mix with, you know. And also, because they're not made of money, an awful lot of the budget is going towards bringing her sister out as a debutante. So there's not like loads of spare cash for Connie to be floating around town all the time. So she's got her own little bit of London that she hangs out in.
And that's where she investigates, is it, in that smaller area?
Well, it's funny when they, you know, at one point they're chasing someone in a cab and they're both like, we don't know where we are.
Yeah.
You know, they're out of their world.
Yeah, yeah, so. You're out of your comfort zone, isn't
you?
But I know one of your books, Liz, and sorry, but I can't, Maisie?
Maisie Frobisher. Yes,
on the
line. At sea, yes.
Again, it's an enclosed space, isn't it? It's a limited crowd of people.
Yeah, and it's
that little world idea.
Little world idea.
You can set up so many suspects, can't you? Especially when they can't get off. It's like being on an island, isn't it? And you can't get off, sort of thing. It's quite scary because we don't know who killed them.
So, what do you think of the qualities of a good amateur sleuth? I mean, nosiness, I assume.
Yes, not taking no for an answer. Going, as I say, where they shouldn't probably go.
And there probably has to be at least one occasion where one of them goes too far.
Yeah, and either end up hurt, in danger, or arrested.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. But
do they need to have some sort of link, however tenuous it might be, with the police?
I think it helps.
You know, either with a particular police...
Because otherwise, how are they going to beat the police?
Yeah, I'm thinking of Father Brown.
Yes.
You know, the inspector in Father Brown is always telling Father Brown, keep out of it.
Yeah, he says he hates him, doesn't he?
He never does, but he's always there at the end to arrest the criminal.
And and I remember watching a Miss Marple once where she said to one of the detectives on the scene, go and see Chief Superintendent so-and-so and mention my name.
Was it Battle?
That could have been, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he went, yeah, okay, sort of thing. And he yeah. went away and mentioned it to somebody and they said, you've got to listen to her.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know. I mean, that's the thing with Miss Marple. She's not of the police, but she is known and respected by the police. Yeah. So she's got that backup when she needs it.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, she's not going to be going and strong arming anybody.
No.
So.
No. But that's what I love about her character. It's probably because I'm getting a little to being a little old lady myself now with the knitting needles. I've got the knitting needles. And it's the way she just sits there. Nobody takes any notice of her. And then she'll just ask a question out the blue that seems so innocent. Mm. You know, and people talk to her because they trust her, you know.
I think also one of the characteristics of these amateur sleuths is that they remember things, you know.
Usually,
you know. It's sort
unless
of,
something conveniently drives it out of their head and they pick it up later and they're mentioning no names here.
But quite often they do, don't they? You know, oh, well, I remember when she used to work
for Miss Marple is an absolute, you know. Yeah. Or I remember a housemaid who was just like that. Yep. Yes, terrible fibber.
Yes, and her marmalade was really lumpy. Yeah.
Well, there you go. And that was the key to the mystery.
But I would like Liz to read something out from one of her cosy mails. Oh. Which one would you like
to? I'm going to go for a bit of Castor and Fleet. And ironically, it's a bit where Connie kind of, not exactly turns professional, but I think she kind of realises where she's been going wrong during the book, because Connie is quite shy at the beginning, quite self-effacing. And I think she feels she has to do everything by the book and behave properly. And, you know, she has to play fair and all of that stuff.
The way
and
she's been brought up.
Something like that. She's, you know, she's had to be a good girl.
Yeah.
And it's really getting towards the end of the book here. And they need to get this person. They absolutely have to get them, because otherwise, you know, bad things are going to happen, clearly. And this is the point when she realises. So they're kind of chasing. I smacked my forehead. How could I have been so stupid? Treadwell, I shouted. Yes, ma'am, came the stoic reply. Stop at the next telegraph office, please. I have an urgent message to send. Yes, ma'am. And the carriage quickened pace. What is it, Connie? Asked Catherine, frowning. We have to move quickly, I said. That doctor, if he is a doctor, knows that we're on to him and that we know the situation. He also knows my name, Catherine gasped. I know, I'm an idiot. I turned to Mr. King, and I'm sorry for doubting you. He made it seem so plausible. You're not stupid at all. He was very convincing, said Mr. King. What are we going to do now? I'm going to do what I should have done ages ago if I'd been brave enough, I said. I'm going to pull rank. My first wire was to our family doctor. Medical opinion required, re lady imprisoned by servants, said to be insane. Imperative remove her to safe place. We'll send carriage with Lamont coat of arms to fetch you in next hour. Do not board any other carriage. Regards, Connie Swift. My next wire was to a man who had terrified me up to the age of about 12, when I had finally realised that he wasn't really going to put me in prison for swinging my legs on my chair. Chief Inspector Barnes was a red-faced man with bushy side whiskers and a half-assumed air of ferocity. He had also been at school with Father and was one of the few guests that Father actually sought out at dinner parties. Dear Chief Inspector, I need you to scare someone else this time. A Miss Gregory is being imprisoned and drugged in her own home by servants. Need help to release her. We'll send carriage with Lamont coat of arms to fetch you in next hour. Board no other carriage. Regards, Connie Swift. P.S. Promise not to swing legs on chair. I handed the forms in and slid my shillings across the counter. More money spent. I hoped fervently that this time we would succeed. This felt like my last chance. What now? Asked Catherine. We'll take Albert home and get him patched up, I said. Albert smiled feebly. Wish I could join you. Think I'd be more of a liability, though. It isn't your fault, I said. I'm sorry you got hurt. I leaned down and kissed his forehead, as far from the wound as I could. His eyes sprang open. Well, he said, maybe this isn't so bad after all. When you've quite finished, said Catherine, nudging me, would you care to explain the plan? Of course, I said. Here's how it goes.
Thank you so much. Yeah, so she...
And it goes what we were saying, you know, that there's that link there with the police.
Yes, she finally decides, you know what, I'm going to use all these contacts I have that because I've been, you know, being like, we have to solve this ourselves.
Yes.
You know, and she finally thinks, no, I have to pull in all the help I can. You know, instead of us being two young women, you know, in a sea of all sorts going on and, you know, not being believed by various people, including the police at some point.
Well, yes. I mean, two young women telling the police that they've found some information back in the day, it would not have gone down very well.
But by involving the police, you're moving towards an outcome to the story, aren't you?
Yes.
To the story.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it's difficult even now for women to go forward to report some crimes because it's a lot better than it was, don't get me wrong. But yeah, a lot of women would have been not believed because they were women and for no other reason. So for them to be able to take that step forward, even with their status such as it is, was a very brave thing for them to do, wasn't it, in the book?
I suppose it was, yeah.
Yeah.
I hadn't really thought about it in that way before.
She's making a...
Yeah. I mean, the other thing with amateur detectives is, of course, they start out and nobody knows what they're up to. But, of course, if they stay in the same community...
People will find out.
People are likely to, you know, if you get a reputation for that, then
they will bring their problems to you, won't they?
There is that.
Yeah. Yes. So it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? Some people won't trust them and other people will go, well, they solve such and such a thing, so I'm going to take, you know, my husband's disappeared up a drain pipe. I'm going to find out where he's gone, sort of thing.
This is very true.
Now, Mike, you've not got any cosy murder mysteries. Have you got any murders?
I don't do cosy.
Just murder.
But if you want something really the opposite end of the spectrum, but quite unpleasant, I can read that out.
Oh, yes, yes.
This one's called Cleansing Unit. It started off as a 100-word story and then got expanded into something longer. The acrid smoke burns my eyes as I navigate the ruins of what was once a thriving village. The stench of rotting flesh invades my nostrils, a nauseating reminder of the carnage we've wrought. I've grown accustomed to it over the months, but it never becomes easier to bear. I signal to my squad, their dark uniforms blending with the ash-covered landscape. They fan out, weapons at the ready. They're bound to be survivors. There always are. It was as if God was trying his best to fight back, despite the odds being stacked against him. A futile effort, really. We are the new gods now, reshaping the world according to our vision. A muffled cry catches my attention. I gesture silently to Rodrigo, my second in command. He nods, moving swiftly towards a partially collapsed structure. There's a brief scuffle, then a single gunshot. Rodrigo emerges, his face impassive. One less survivor to worry about. My men would deal with them, some more mercifully than others. I try not to think about the methods some employ. As long as the job gets done, I turn a blind eye. There were to be no prisoners. My superiors have been adamant in wanting nobody left behind to tell any tales. Silence is crucial to our operation. As we continue our sweep, I reflect on how we arrived at this point. It started small, isolated incidents, terrorist cells they called them, but it grew, spreading like a virus across borders and continents. Those in power saw an opportunity, a chance to reshape society. They spoke of cleansing, of progress, of a brighter future, and we, the soldiers, became their instruments of change. A child's doll catches my eye amidst the debris. I pick it up, the once cheerful face now blackened and melted. For a moment, I allow myself to feel a twinge of remorse, but I quickly suppress it. Doubt is a luxury I can't afford. Sir, calls one of my men, we found a group hiding in a cellar. I nod, steeling myself for what comes next. You know what to do. The sound of gunfire echoes through the devastated village. By nightfall, it will be all over. No survivors, no witnesses, just another nameless settlement wiped from the map in the name of progress. As the sun sets, casting an eerie orange glow over the smouldering ruins, I gather my team. Their faces are grim, some haunted, others disturbingly blank. We've been at this for months now, and it's taken its toll on all of us. Good work, I say, the words tasting like ash in my mouth. We move out at dawn. There's another target 50 miles west. They nod silently, preparing for another night of fitful sleep, punctuated by nightmares we'll never speak of. As I settle into my tent, I pull out the orders for our next mission. More burning, more cleansing, all in the name of progress. I try to convince myself this is necessary, that we're building a better world. But as I drift off to sleep, the faces of those we've cleansed haunt my dreams, their silent screams a damning testament to the future we're creating. Yeah, something light. I told you it'd be nice and light.
Yeah. You know what? Miss Marple's tracking them down and she's going to get them.
You did, wow. ask for something different.
I did.
Yes. Careful what you wish for. Yeah. Flip it.
Yeah, that was.
I would love it if you had a go at a cozy. I remember you once saying you're going to have a go at dystopian cozy. So I think you should take that world and give it a go.
There's a genre just for you.
Yes. I think you'd enjoy that.
I'm sorry if I've depressed everybody.
No, it's fine. No.
In a dystopian landscape, a post-apocalyptic wasteland, one tea shop remains.
Now there's an opening.
There you go. You can have that.
That's one you'd never see. Writing something like that.
Give us time. Give us time.
And on a lighter note. But Mike's stories are usually quite short, snappy, and usually even the ones that are... there's death in make us laugh usually, don't they?
Oh, wow. That was so unrelentingly miserable, Mike. I think that may be why I prefer your shorter form ones.
It was very provocative. It was very thought-provoking. Yeah. Provoking.
It was.
Mouth isn't working anymore.
Ah. maybe we should have a slot on the podcast, you know.
What sort of slot?
Time to be depressed. Here's Mike.
It's a thought. Yes.
Oh my gosh, no.
Yeah, I'm slightly worried though. I don't think Carol and I can ever be off at the same time because if we leave you alone for the listeners for half an hour, I'm not sure what's going to happen.
One of my favourite singers is Leonard Cohen.
I think you used to teach small children.
I did. Leonard Cohen.
Cheery man.
Whenever I hear him, I feel like slitting my throat.
Oh,
so
maybe next time I could
read a story and have a Leonard Cohen music playing in the background.
Yeah, I'm just
why not?
There was a group that I can't remember the name of them now, and that I always wanted to get the razor blades out when I listened to them.
The podcast numbers might just fall dramatically.
Possibly.
No, they won't. I think I'm gonna stop now before we get.
I've got no.
No, you've not. it's that time again. I hope you've enjoyed our little rant and
with a slight foray into horror at the end.
And I do apologise if us going off on tangents annoys you, but that's just what
we
do.
If they're still here, I assume it's okay.
Yeah, you would have gone now. You wouldn't be listening to us anymore, would you? So if you just press, record, receive, like. Press the bell, all those sort of things.
Noticed Carol's becoming more and more an expert on YouTube.
Press the ringy thing, yeah. So I'm not a bit technical. That's where we've got our producer sat in the other room.
Who's cringing, by the way.
until next time, thank you for listening. You have been listening to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production, produced by John Bissett. The music in Peril was composed and recorded by OM Studio Strings.